Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast about waiting for the Doom Patrol comic to return to new, active, monthly, and ongoing publication.
Is it too much to ask? Is it?
I don't think so.
Hold me.
Come here, little buddy. I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter, at AvantGarve, and you can also find Wilfred, the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is at WFDPod.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter, at reading_Hicks, and you can also find us on Facebook, and our episodes are all over the place. They're spread out on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbean.com, and you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com.
So, Paul, can you pull yourself together a bit, man up, and tell me how was your last week in comics?
Someone called me an arsat today. I just thought I'd share that.
Wait, was that in a comic?
No, on Twitter. Someone on Twitter called me an asshat. Asshat. I don't know. I'm struggling with the pronunciation.
Why did they do that, Paul?
Because I suggested we should do the podcast on a daily basis.
Right. Okay. You realize what would be involved in putting this show together on a daily basis, don't you?
All it would cost is our jobs and our marriages.
Yeah.
That's all.
That's all.
You've got to think it would be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me? No? Well, thanks to the kindness of my good friend Moby, who went into free comic book day at D's Book and Comics in Belconnen in Canberra, he got me a copy of the DC offering, which was called Divergence.
Ooh, nice.
Little play on words with convergence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bit of resurgence of wordplay there. Anyway, so I got to read Divergence, which is, it's basically 8-page previews for, not previews, they're little mini-stories that fit before the next month of stories in Superman, Justice League, and Batman. So you get an 8-page story by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo showing what's coming up in Batman, and that was about the new Batman, which really spoiled the ending of Endgame for me, because I'm waiting for the trade on that.
Oh, no. So, whoops.
Anyway, so there's a new Batman in town, and this basically told me who that was.
Right.
So that was interesting. And it was a good little story. And the Superman one was about Superman having how inconvenient it is now that everyone knows his identity.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so there's some changes in the Superman book.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sitting having a latte with Jimmy Olsen, and some guy spots him and then starts picking a super fight with him.
Oh, God.
Chucks a food truck at him. Anyway,
right.
So that was cool. And the final story was the Justice League one, which was all about the origins of Darkseid's daughter.
Right.
Which has been a little plot thread that's been kicking around since the days when Vibe was being published.
Holy jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was, I think it was Amanda Waller had this place called The Pipeline, which had all these criminals locked up, and one of them was Darkseid's daughter, and they said she'd gotten out.
Ooh.
So, but you never actually saw her back in that comic, you just heard about it. So.
Right.
Yeah, so they didn't forget about that. They've actually been building on it, which, I mean, is unsurprising because Geoff Johns was involved with the Vibe comic.
Yeah.
And he's the current writer of Justice League. So.
Then again, he also put the Doom Patrol in the Justice League. So, come on, Geoff.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Make it up to us.
Yeah. Come on, Johns.
Not everyone cares about Darkseid. They want to hear about the Doom Patrol.
I didn't even know he had a daughter till just now. You know?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. Anyway, so Darkseid's daughter, the mum is an Amazon.
Ooh.
And she was born the same day as Wonder Woman.
Uh-oh. Oh,
so lots of gods banging Amazons going on.
Wow.
New gods and old gods.
God's getting it on.
Getting it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
Well, last week was a bit of an epic week. We had Batman 40, which wrapped up Endgame. So, yeah. Avengers 44, which wrapped up Jonathan Hickman's last 3 years of the Avengers and launches the Secret Wars. Alex and Ada had a pretty epic issue. It's second last issue, so, and that got me a bit teary-eyed, to be honest. Something happened in that I was not expecting, and I got a little bit upset.
I heard you swear on Twitter. It didn't sound like you were teary-eyed.
There were tears, then there was foul language.
You went through the seven stages of grief with that one?
With just those two, yeah.
Bargaining.
Denial. Bargaining, denial, teary eyes, swearing on Twitter, acceptance.
Ice cream.
Ice cream. And then the seventh one is having a good lay down. Yeah. there was also Justice League 40, which, yeah, was essentially the beginning of the Dark Side War, and Multiversity 2, wrapping up the whole Multiversity story from Grant Morrison. So that was batshit crazy as well.
Bit of a head scratcher?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it will definitely require a reread of the two Multiversity issues and the however many books that came out between them, just to get my head around exactly what happened. I mean, yeah, you kind of get what's happening, but it's so much going on, and it's Morrison, so of course it's, yeah, well, it's Morrison.
It's Morrison.
Yeah, Morrison. Yeah, say no more. So yeah, lots of big events and big happenings in my books last week. So it was a good week. Lots going on.
Tell me more. But what's that ticking?
What do you want?
Don't tell me more.
Make up your mind. Jeez, I think it's only the doom clock. Jeez. Oh,
it's the bloody doom clock again.
Every week. Just like clockwork, eh? Hey. I took my sunglasses off specially for that joke.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome, Paul. So let's have a look at the face of the doom clock. We can see that the last issue of a Doom Patrol proper book was number 22 from volume 5, which came out in July of 2011. So we've not had a Doom Patrol book to ourselves in about 3 years and 9 months.
It's so. Like four lifetimes. No, it's not. Well,
no, it's not. What maths are you using? God. The last appearance of the Doom Patrol was back in Justice League number 33 from October of 2014, and that was just over 6 months ago. So, again, Geoff Johns, you know, don't hold on to this, dude. You know, we're here.
Come on, Geoff.
Yeah, come on, Geoff.
Get it together. Come on, Geoff. Hey, Geoff. Good Geoff.
Wow. Wow. This week in Doom Patrol history, released back in 1993, was issue 67 of volume 2 for the princely sum of $1.95. This issue was written by Rachel Pollack, and it marked the 30th anniversary of the team. And it also introduced a new art team of Linda Medley and Graham Higgins. And the story within it was titled Heroes in the Autos, which introduces to George and Marion, the Bandage People, as well as the preteen menace known as the Wild Girls. There are a couple of other introductions in this issue as well, but I won't spoil them because there was kind of lots going on. They also moved to a new headquarters, and yeah, that deserves its whole own episode as to what was in that headquarters. It also has the amazing cover showing the chief's head sitting in a cooler, or esky, as we would call it here in Australia, filled
it's
with
bloody
ice.
Esky, mate. Bloody, it's bloody
well,
esky.
Yeah, all right. It's a bloody esky if you're Australian, or it's a cooler if you're in another country, maybe. It's filled with ice. It's got the chief's head resting in it on its side. Attached to the bloody esky is a note from Dorothy, and it reads, "Cliff, don't forget feed head." And this is one of my all-time favorite covers from the Doom Patrol. And it looks like, you know, a photorealistic head sitting in this you know, box filled with ice. And
esky. It's
got a bloody esky. And, you know, a little tin of chocolate milkshake with a straw just off to the side for the chief to drink from. So, yeah. Interesting issue.
Nice.
And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
For Doomsplain this week, we're looking at a pivotal issue that explores one of our favourite characters. This also continues our ongoing arc-by-arc trip through the Grant Morrison run. Doom Patrol, Volume 2, Number 30, from March 1990, which goes way deep into the tragic origins of Crazy Jane.
Ah, tragic, all right. I know this series of Doom Patrol gets a bit dark at times, but this issue in particular gets pretty dark.
Well, I would probably say this is the darkest part of the whole Morrison run.
Mm.
Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, when we last left the Doom Patrol, Crazy Jane had saved the world from the Fifth Horseman, trapped inside the painting, which was galloping out to destroy the world.
Yes.
Fifth Horseman was called, what, Destruction or Armageddon or something?
I think he was called both.
Yeah. And Jane basically occupied the Horseman's hollow body and steered it through the painting and saved everyone.
Yes.
But she emerged comatose.
Mm.
Yeah, so we open with shots of Cliff's clothes hanging up on a coat hook and pants over the chair and the boots sitting there. We see a monitor with a heartbeat going. It's not a big monitor. I think it's a small monitor in this case.
They had to cut down in modern times. they can't afford the extravagant giant 1960s monitors anymore.
No, it's more realistic now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, more realistic. Hello, what comic are you reading?
Anyway, and we see a single panel on the first page of some jigsaw pieces scattering and falling.
Remember the jigsaw pieces, everyone.
Yeah, and then a very extreme close-up of Cliff's face. He says, I hope this is going to work.
Yeah.
What's going to work? Basically, they explain how Jane is in a comatose condition now, and no one can reach her. Rebus can't reach her. Cliff is the only one she trusts, and all the defensive barriers probably won't be held up for Cliff, so they're going to detach Cliff's brain and connect him to Crazy Jane and see if he can revive her consciousness.
Comic book science at its finest.
Yeah. And Rebus explains that she's retreated into her mind where it's safe. I can open the door, but only you can go inside, Cliff. You are the only one she trusts. I can't pretend it won't be highly dangerous. Mm. And Cliff's happy to do it, though, still.
Again, one of my favourite qualities of Cliff, that he'll just go in and get it done, you know?
Yeah. He'll do anything for a friend.
Yes.
Yeah. So Cliff is disconnected from his robot body, put in a jar, and he sees, hears nothing, experiences nothing. He's got total sensory deprivation, pure mind, and then Rebus does the transfer and pushes Cliff into Jane's consciousness.
Mm.
And then we see the opening title page, which is called Going Underground. We see Cliff falling into black space, and below him is... it's like a map of a train underground network, and all the stations are different names of Crazy Jane's personalities.
Mm.
Yeah, so we see a whole bunch of them. Some of them are even male, I've noticed. Like Andrew, the Weird Sisters, the Signalman, Jill in Iron, Sin Eater, Jenny, Miranda, the Pointman, Flaming Katie. Then we see Crazy Jane's actually a station, Hammerhead, etc.
Lots of different personalities. Yeah.
Yeah. Cliff is grappling with what he's trying to see and realizes it's a map. And then Rebus says, I can't go any further, Cliff. That's it. You're on your own. And from then on, we're all inside Jane's head space as it is. And we see that Cliff's arrived in a fairly decrepit station. And then he's greeted by a woman dressed in sort of train conductor gear.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I'm Driver 8, welcome to the underground. And she briefs him on the situation. We have serious problems here, Cliff. There's been a lot of damage. The engineer and the pointman are doing what they can, but it's complete chaos. The experience with the fifth horseman almost destroyed the underground. A normal wind would have been smashed beyond repair. As it is, the shockwaves have damaged stations on almost every level.
Yeah, it's not a good situation for Jane at all.
Yeah. And the last bit of explanation, that's why the woman is cataleptic. No one wants to take control anymore in case they get hurt. Yeah. So Cliff is there to help. And so he's aboard the train and off into the underground. So, yeah, we've seen a physical manifestation of all Jane's personalities within her. So the stations. So it's a really clever way of showing it to people.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison's come up with, and the art in this one is particularly strong from Richard Case. That, you know, there's so much he's got to convey. So, you know, we see the train going through stations that are just filled with debris and broken things and umbrellas and chairs and
cameras. It's a really dark place.
Yeah. And we see that everything's messed up, and this whole story is like a sort of Orpheus in the Underworld sort of type journey. Mm-hmm. It's a hero's quest into the darkness with guardians who bar the path, all to face something hideous at the end.
Yeah, that's... And we also get, as the train travels along, we're getting more and more information from Driver 8 about Jane's personal history and what happened to her in her life. And she's had a really... really tragic life. Really horrible things have happened to her. Yeah.
So just to clarify, Jane's real name is Kay Chalice, and Crazy Jane is really only one of the selves who keeps the woman functioning. And as for Kay, she hasn't really existed since she was 5 years old. She's asleep in one of the deep stations. So there's a bit of hint. But they talk about K5, she was the first of us, the one who endured the first abuse. The tremors are still resonating. So
yeah, that's the first worrying hint right there. Yeah.
So yeah, this is a tough issue to talk about because it really is going into just the damage that child abuse, sexual abuse of a child can do to someone. And there's a real... It's a really clever way to express it and show it as far as, you know, the different personalities. And it's remarkable that this is happening in a sort of a mainstream superhero book.
Oh, yeah.
I just applaud everyone involved that they're willing to explore this and push it and give you an understanding of how horrible this is and what it does to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right when you say mainstream. I mean, this wasn't even a Vertigo book at the time. It was still within DC proper. So, yeah, I'm kind of amazed they even got this out the gate, so to speak. Yeah.
So, what's the first stop? We hear about... there's one station they go through, and it's Miranda's station. So, and Driver 8 says, don't look, and... Miranda was a personality that completely imploded.
Yeah.
Miranda was very functional and had a job as a graphic designer in Metropolis. And then it said, in a church at Easter, it all came back, a lamb bleeding, sweating, hairy flesh. She remembered things she wasn't supposed to. Remembered awful things. Miranda destroyed herself in the well and the underground suffered terrible damage. That was the personality that crashed before Crazy Jane ended up at the hospital where Cliff found her at the start of issue 19.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And her station is so horrible that Driver 8, you know, is yelling at Cliff, you know, don't look, cover your eyes, don't look.
Yeah.
And we never see what's in her station, but it's, you know, it's got to be terrible for Cliff to avert his eyes. So.
Yeah. At this point, the line is blocked with rubble, so there's no more travelling by train, so Cliff has to get out, and he sees glimpses of other personalities. There's Sylvia, who's a fragmented personality of Kay when she was 14, and Sylvia's basically wants to be a poet but can't come up with anything that is complete. It's all fragments and it's a mess. And she, if she can ever finish a poem, she can escape the room that she's trapped in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then down a ladder, another shot of the falling jigsaw pieces. So that's hinting at something.
Yep.
And then we see a very different room, which is basically
probably the most perfect, idealized childhood a little girl could ask for, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, a room full of toys and a big comfy-looking bedroom and, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and that's Baby Doll. Mm-hmm. And Baby Doll is the sort of the sweet child version of Kay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole time, Driver 8 is giving Cliff more and more background on things. She talks about the poem that Yeats wrote, Crazy Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Reads a bit of it. Also talks about a painting by Richard Dadd, who's a Victorian artist. Schizophrenic, killed his father. That's her description.
Cheery.
Yeah. Yeah. And I sent you a picture of that.
You did. Earlier. And at first I thought you were joking, but then I researched it. And no, that's actually a painting of a person called Crazy Jane based on poems about this same person that Richard Dadd, you know, adapted into his painted piece. So, yeah. I like when Morrison gives us real-world things in his own story that you can go and investigate further.
Yeah. And then from the beautiful room of Baby Doll, they ended up in, like, a sewer-looking room filled with skulls on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And there appears Black Annis, who's, like, the animalistic, clawed, monstrous personality. And she's sort of one of Jane's defense mechanisms when, you know, this is where all the hate and anger and distrust of men has manifested.
Yeah, misandry personified, pretty much.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And she slashes at Cliff and opens him up, and I'll open you like an old tin can, she says. And yeah. And then she says, men, they think they're so hard, but they tear open like tissue paper.
Mm.
And then another quick shot of the jigsaw pieces. But Cliff is, he has a new tactic. He says, we don't want to hurt her. You have to let us by. And then he says, listen to me, I'm not a man, not anymore. He strips off his clothing, exposing his sexless body. And it's just... I don't know. It's a beautiful thing that Cliff is just so without ego that he's willing to just lose all, you know, dignity and, you know, just declare that he's lost all his manhood by, you know, becoming a robot man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not a threat to Jane. He's, you know, he will do anything he can to help.
That's what I love about Cliff, that, you know, he'll go to any length to help his friends out and, you know, put himself in danger to save whoever else he needs to. You know, it's such an awesome quality in his character. Yeah.
Then he's faced with just an array of personalities. There's a whole room full of them, and Black Annis is speaking for them, but there's one who looks like an accountant with glasses and a ledger, and he says, there's no need for this display. It simply can't be done. It's too dangerous. But then we see Flit in a pink T-shirt. Flit's the teleporter, says, it's Lady Purple, look. And Lady Purple comes forward and is she going to speak? And the others say, she's never spoken before. She says, yes, let him through, alone. And he goes down. So then he's in the darkest depths of Kay's personality.
Mm.
And we see the well. And then we see Crazy Jane, the one that we all recognize, and she's perched on the edge of this huge well. We see flashbacks of the trauma from her dad.
What I find interesting about these flashbacks is not just the colouring, but how they seem a bit more realistic to play off against the insanity as to what's happening down near the well. And with, you know, the vast array of the personalities, you know, trying to stop Cliff from rescuing Jane. And it was a dark read. I know I keep saying that, but it really was.
Yeah, so we see that 5-year-old Kay is doing a jigsaw puzzle. her father, who we just see has a distorted, shadowy figure in the doorway, comes in. She basically said, "I haven't finished my jigsaw." And he says, "Jigsaw, jigsaw," and throws the jigsaw across the room.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut to Jane on the edge of the well, about to collapse in. Cliff grabs her, and he's going, "Come on, it's okay. Jane, it's okay. We're going home." "No," he says, "I've got to go with him," he says. "And you have to, no matter how big, he's bigger." And then we see this monstrous, gross, distorted father figure come out of the well, covered in bugs and worms and drooling and jagged teeth, and it's just disgusting.
Just so the most horrendous, I guess, apparition of her abusive father that's, still in, you know, the depths of her psyche, still torturing her all these years later.
Yeah. And he's saying, "Baby lamb, lammy baby." And then Cliff points out, "Jane, it's your voice, it's your voice." And this is the damage that people experience. It's inside them, even though it's no longer there.
Yeah.
They take it on for themselves.
Yep.
Cliff jumps in and tries to fight, and he gets bitten in half by the monstrous father. This prompts Jane to snap out of things and said, "Daddy, Daddy, I hate you." And we see hundreds of voices saying that at once. And she basically says, "I hate you filthy, ugly bastard. I'm not afraid of you. Die, you bastard. Die in bits." And we see the figure falling into jigsaw pieces.
Mm.
Yeah. And so she has basically defeated her own inner demons and re-established control. And we see her wake up out of the coma. We see she's fully conscious. And everyone turns and go, "What about Cliff?" And we see Cliff in the jar.
Well, Cliff's brain in the jar. Yeah.
Yeah, Cliff's brain just sitting in the jar. And that's where the issue ends.
We just had Jane in a catatonic state, and now we're ending with Cliff.
Yeah.
In potentially a catatonic state. But that's a rough read, especially with what you learn about what happened to Jane as a child. You don't actually see it. You don't see anything that graphic being done to her, but it's made clear that, you know, something really horrible happened to her.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got the jigsaw metaphor, which is, her personalities are fragmented like a jigsaw. And,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I first read this comic when it came out, and I was 21 at the time, and I knew no one who had suffered any sort of abuse like that as a child.
Yeah.
But since then, I've met people who have, and, they're not multiple personalities, but they certainly carry the scars, and it affects the way they interact with people. It affects the way they think about everything.
Yeah.
Affects their trust in people. There's things I just take for granted because, my parents were loving and trustworthy and, and theirs weren't. And, it's just horrendous.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was also reading about how Morrison was reading the autobiography of a woman by the name of Trudy Chase, who had similar things happen to her. She was sexually abused as a child, and she created quite a number of different personalities to, cope with life and help her get through it. And, she had dissociative identity disorder, and that's how she coped with life and got through the pain and the trauma. So interesting how Morrison took what he read about her and incorporated it into a comic book. So,
yeah, that was one of the brilliant things about Morrison was I think so many comics that came in the decades before this were written by people who love comics and, they brought in their experiences with comics and built on them, whereas Morrison came in with all these other experiences from outside the world of comics. Like, he came in with, philosophy and art and, all this different stuff that was a fairly common thing for the incoming, they call it the Brit invasion of comics with Alan Moore and others like that, Garth Ennis, James Robinson, people like that, they all brought in their different experiences and they weren't your typical comics anymore.
No, no.
Yeah.
It was all changing.
Yeah. Mm. And this is, I mean, this is the 12th issue of Grant Morrison's run. So he's only been doing this for 1 year. And,
yeah.
You know, the old version of the Doom Patrol is just so hard to imagine anymore. You know, the regular sort of like an X-Men team. It's, you know, everything's changed.
Even thinking back to the colours used, the first part of this volume was a lot more colourful and a lot more gung-ho and much more stereotypical superheroics. By this issue, that's all gone, all out the window. Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely different ball game.
Mm. Yeah. And of course, I mean, this issue, there's just no hint of the humor that's, you know, prevalent in the book before this. You know, it's a serious issue covering serious issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
As much as I love the cover of this as well, by Simon Bisley, which just makes you think, oh, look, Cliff's going to fight a giant monster. And then when you get into it, it's like, oh, God, that's who the monster is and that's what they represent. Yeah, it's a heavy issue.
Yeah, it sure is. Mm. Okay, we might leave that one there. Have a little bit of music to see if we can adjust our tone for the rest of this episode. Right. Segment, and this week we asked everybody, how do you keep track of the comics you own? Assuming you own them. Anyway, so
yes.
We first heard from at Panderson Art, which is his name was Brian Panderson, legendary comic made up legend, and he said, I don't.
Fair enough. We heard from Nicholas at NICRDE on Twitter, and he said he uses a notebook.
A notebook. We're getting nice short answers, aren't we?
Yeah, awesome.
And then we got Chris Hogan's answer, who's at Unlikely Nerd, and he said the CLZ comic app. I said it in American then, did you notice?
Well done.
Yeah. It lets you scan or manually enter in all your books, shows different covers if you have variants, and lets you build a wish list for books that you want, need, yeah, that's the word, comes in super handy at cons when digging through boxes. And he had a bit of a chat with the really famous about that app and said it was $14.99.
That is correct.
That is correct. I looked it up today.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually $24.99 for Australians.
Wow.
And that, you don't come with the barcode scanner, so for another $8 you can get the barcode scanner as well.
Really?
Really.
Okay, I'll go ahead and spoil my answer because I use the exact same app that Chris uses. And I don't remember having to pay extra for the scanner.
Wow.
Maybe I got it when it was on sale or something.
Yeah. Well, I looked at it and thought, oh, that'd be nice to have. And then I saw the price and thought, no.
Yeah, I thought the 15 that I paid, and I'm sure I only paid 15, was a bit much, but it is a really good app. It's really handy and it's awesome. And I know exactly how many comics I have, and I still have more to scan in. And let's not talk about that in front of my wife.
yes. Oh, it wouldn't surprise me if one day I'll get it. Next time I get an iTunes card for my birthday, I might splash out on it.
Making a note. iTunes. Okay. We also heard from Steve T-shirt meter, exclamation point, who is at tparkmet on Twitter. And Steve said, in the old days, books of graph paper I made primitive spreadsheets in. When the world caught up to me, I used Microsoft Excel.
Lovely. Mm. We heard from Matt Roberts, Mr. Oberts, who said, same as Unlikely Nerd, but I use the desktop app of CLZ.
Wonder if that was any cheaper.
I don't know. I doubt it.
Kurt at P. Foxen on Twitter. He said, geologically, by strata. that's a different method.
Yeah, I'm finding that hard to picture, but anyway. Ange, Dr. Ange.
Dr. Ange, he is the man.
Yeah, Dr. Ange 70 on Twitter. He said, comicbookdb.com, just a fantastic site for any fanatic. Any fanatic? I don't think it's good for religious fanatics. Anyway, separate Excel sheets for books I have had autographed over the years. So that's nice. Smart. Yeah, keeping track of the autograph ones.
Yeah. Rift, old Rifty, at Rift1821. He said, I don't. They get put in boxes and then I totally forget which ones I have. Okay.
Okay.
Very nonchalant of you, Rift.
Rift does it. Does it
casually? Does it his own way, you know? Yeah. He's a rebel. He's a odd collector.
We heard from Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy, and he said, I don't. Size hangs head in shame. Google spreadsheet for pull list, but that's it. Didn't read it pile here, sort pile there.
Okay. We also heard from Karthik Kakarala, who said later this year, he'll do a bit more digital cataloging, but right now it's mostly fuzzy memory and the occasional scrawled note.
Wow.
Whatever works, Karthik.
Heard from Moby. Moby got me Divergence at Shmoby1. He said, Excel spreadsheet that was updated until 2002, the year our second child was born. I have very little idea what I purchased since.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that mean that that child is now old enough to do the sorting for him?
Yeah, but you can lead a child to comic books, but you can't make them sort.
Well played, sir. Well played. How about yourself, Paul? How do you keep track of your comics?
Well, I have an excellent memory.
Really?
I do.
So you were able to excellently find all your comics that had your letters in due to your excellent memory. Is this what you're telling me? When you moved them around?
Oh, shut your face, Garby. No, I've lost that bit of paper, so that's why. But I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there.
Good work. It's good to have a quest.
Yeah, but mostly I know what I got because I culled my collection several times down to just the stuff I really, really want to reread. Mm-hmm. And not the stuff that I just bought because I thought it would be really cool. So because of that, you know, I know pretty much where I stopped buying Superman comics because the books started to suck and, you know, I know what events I have. And I tend to have, not a bad memory for what's where and things like that. So, but, I mean, whenever I buy, since 2000, basically, I have been listing every trade that I've bought because I mostly started focusing on trades and hardcovers. And I do a yearly list of them. And every year when I get to the end of that year, I have a little vote in my head and say, okay, that one was the best. And I highlight that in a different color. So I could tell you what my favorite trade that I got in 2002 was quite easily. And things
wow.
Like that. Yeah. And I also have a spreadsheet. And I have another list that I mark down and sort of, you know, there's lots of super OCD rituals involved with me getting stuff.
I have a spreadsheet for the weekly stuff.
Yeah.
And then I update that once I've got that week's stuff. And then when I get them home and after I've read them all, that's when they get scanned into the CLZ app.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure everyone has their own little rituals. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have lists of the things, like the order things run, because if I've got like 30 Green Lantern trades and I want to reread them all, I need to know which order to read them in, and I've got all that already listed.
Yeah. That's just common sense.
Yeah, who wouldn't do that? Did you notice that no women replied to this question?
I had not until you just mentioned it just then.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What does that tell us?
That...
we should be very careful about what we say.
Yes. Yes, we should. I think that might even be a good point to sign off on.
Right. Well, that's it for our show. Has anything special happened with the downloads for the show this week, Mike?
Well, funny you should mention that, Paul, because yes, we've just hit our 3,000th play of the show. So a big thank you to everyone that has listened to the show, either just recently or from the start. Thank you so much, guys. It is much appreciated, and thank you for your support thus far.
Yes, thank you, everybody. And we'd like to thank you, and you, and you, and you. We'd like to thank those people in Sweden and the Netherlands and the one person in China who listened to one app once.
Yes. Big thank you to him or her.
Or her.
Sorry. Damn it, going to get in trouble with the ladies again.
Uh-huh. Special shout out to all the ladies.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Thank you very much for listening, guys. It's a lot of fun putting the show together, and thank you for indulging us as we talk about our favorite superhero team and the insane stuff that happens with them over the years.
Yeah. And just because we're not doing a Hitman podcast doesn't mean you shouldn't go out and buy the Hitman trades, because you will thank us if you do. I mean, we're already getting people saying, you know, how amazing the Doom Patrol is, but man, check out those Hitman books.
I've got to say, that's actually really cool to have people listen to the show and then go out and pick up Doom Patrol books after listening to us. That's very gratifying and very cool. And it's funny to influence someone's reading habits in such a manner.
Yeah.
It's like they like us. They really like us, Paul.
Yeah. And I mean, there are a lot of comics out there that we could talk about, but Doom Patrol really is something different and special.
Yes. Yes.
You know, in just about all of its eras.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Except for Burns.
Except for Burns. That sucks.
As always, you can find us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you can also reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page.
Excellent. Do that. Send us more emails too.
Mm.
Yeah. And leave us iTunes reviews. Leave us money. Leave us money in your will.
I think you've gone too far, Paul.
I'm sorry.
What's happening next week on the show?
Next week, we spend some time on the Doom Couch with special guest, awesome comic writer who loves the Doom Patrol and asks to be on the show.
Do I really have to say this line?
It's in the script, mate.
I won't give away who it is, but this person's name rhymes with Piss Nutella.
Piss Nutella. You're a sick man, Carvey.
I want it known that I don't write the scripts for the show. Oh, dear me. Yeah. All right. So, yes, we'll see you all again next week for more Doom Patrol goodness. Thanks for listening, guys. See you then.
Bye.